Yes. So, like I said downstairs, conditionality is a very profound teaching in many ways, and I'm not going to pretend to take you down the rabbit holes today. Well, except we're going to look at a particular kind of teaching that expresses the law of conditionality very much in the context of our own individual personal experience. So how many people familiar with this image? Okay, so some people not seen it before. Yeah, so that's fine. How many people familiar with the teaching of the gap? The gap between feeling and craving. Yeah? Okay. So some fun. Just getting sense of where we're at. So if for those who haven't heard it before, well, no, for anyone actually, but you know, if a question comes up or you're getting lost or you're getting bored or whatever, just let me know. Yeah? Okay. My initial thought when Ratna Prabhu was talking, said we're going to do the next season on conditionality, rising and falling. I went straight off. I went to these two arrows. Which for me, that's a very significant symbol in the terms of how I understand the spiritual life, or life, whatever you want to call it. It's something I much more associate with Taoism, actually, than Buddhism as such, because this is earth rising, heaven descending. So it's also there in the kind of Western model of spirit and soul, the feminine is the ground and the masculine is the sky. So the father sky, mother earth way of being. You know that is part of our kind of indigenous shamanic system of being. Yeah. Does that make any sense to me? Yeah, so this top up-down polarity, in a way. I mean, I'm also a craniosacral therapist, and we work with a movement, an energetic movement that literally does that, goes up the body, turns, comes back down again. So, you know, as organisms, we're doing that all the time as well. But, I mean, it's there in Buddhism, but interestingly, perhaps for me, is that in Buddhism we get this image of a wheel. Yeah, so this is the wheel. We get this image of a wheel, which for me kind of exists on a sort of horizontal. Yeah, so flip that plane. Yeah, so the wheel exists on this horizontal plane. And yeah, in this teaching Buddhism, this is kind of what we call samsara, or the mundane world. Yeah, people familiar with that term, samsara? It's not just a perfume; it is actually a description of the state we're in. So on this. On the wheel, this wheel, which we can also understand to be a mirror, which, as you see, is held in the jaws of death. So we can understand this as we look into it and see where we are. So in this part of the wheel, we've got six different realms. We've got God's realm, hell realm, human realm, angry gods, animals and the strictured hungry ghosts. So, yeah, we're not going to go into these in detail this evening, but very interesting kind of material, and we can kind of travel into those realms and see what you experience there of yourself, because we've all got elements of these. They're all part of our patternings. Around the outside of the wheel is, in a way, well, it's a separate teaching in a way. So you've got this, you have this teaching here. The wheel is full of teaching. Outside, you've got this a chain, as we call it. So this is a kind of pictorial way of describing how each moment of consciousness arises. Both each moment of consciousness arises, but also how each life arises. So it works in the infinitesimal, but it also works in the context of the length of a single life. It also works in terms of the cosmic species, no doubt, but I can't quite get there. It's only a model. Careful when we come across these kind of descriptions and models and things, and if we start to become too fixated on them as things in themselves. So just, allow the suggestion of the model to just to kind of play with you. Yeah, one of my craniosacral therapy teachers says, the universe is always flirting with us. So just see if we can be receptive to the mystery. So just to notice, we've got this horizontal world that we're on, spinning round and round on. And remembering that world is always touched by a sense of unsatisfactoriness. So something in our experience not quite satisfied, something in us still ill at ease, and also by insubstantiality and impermanence. So these are these three, we talked about these earlier in the series, the three marks of the condition. Yeah, there is another trajectory available to us. So this is a horizontal wheel. So basically, we just stay, for as long as we continue on this wheel, we're just staying basically in the same place. We're not really developing. We're not evolving. And if we want to think in terms of spiritual evolution, which is something that Sangrajita has encouraged us to do, there's a point on this wheel where there is the possibility of going in a spiral path. People get the distinction between a wheel that's turning on a horizontal plane and a wheel that is spinning in a spiral. Let's just all do it, shall we? Just get that sense. Get a sense with your hand. With your hand. Come on. Audience participation. Oh, great. So, here we are. We're on a plane, and then we're going to go off in a spiral. There we go. So, that will have, the kinesthetic learners amongst us will have enjoyed that. So, and there's a particular point on this wheel where we can make that transition, where there is this fork in the road. Okay. So, any questions so far? No. I have a question. Is there any more tea in the pot?
No.
No?
dinosaur.
Lights okay? Okay. So I think you probably can't see the details in these, so you'll just have to take my word for it, okay? So we're going to take a little tour around the wheel. Yeah, just remembering that this is a kind of a description of a sequence of becoming. One of the insights of the Buddha, which again is inexplicable, is that somehow reality is becoming, is coming into form and disappearing out of form all the time. Yeah, so there's this kind of strange play between form and emptiness going on all the time. But we start at ignorance, avidya. I mean, it said you can actually start anywhere on the wheel, because you can, because it's a wheel, so there's no beginning or end to it. Traditionally we start with ignorance. In the middle of the wheel, actually, we have ignorance. And anyone else know what's at the centre of the wheel? Yeah. And what do we know what quality that represents? We've got the pig, the cock, and the snake.
Oh, yes.
So ignorance.
Greed.
Craving, yeah.
Craving.
Yeah, and its opposite, which is?
Aversion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's our understanding of what our tragic, unenlightened minds are up to. A lot of the time, because we're not quite getting it. Ignorance we start with here. I think, you know, for some people, when people say, "Oh, Buddhism starts with ignorance," it's kind of like that's a big turn off. They don't like the fact that sounds ridiculous. You know, who are you calling stupid? But I think, you know, for me, there's actually some comfort in it, knowing that somehow someone more intelligent than myself is saying to me, you know, you're getting it wrong, and you're still getting it wrong, but you know, that's done. I know that's done with a kind of quality of kindness as well. Very much you get from the sense of, from the Buddha's life, you get that sense that he really wanted people to find freedom. So his teaching kind of comes with that quality attached. Accepting that at some level we're getting it wrong. Productive, creative even we are in the world, at some level we can't kind of perfect samsara if we continue in our state of ignorance. And our ignorance is indeed, of course, our manifold, but the kind of principial ignorance is understood to be the separate sense of self, that somehow self and other is an existing duality, which apparently it's not. Thus have I heard. There's this kind of misconception takes place. There's this kind of you can think about it as something in the matrix goes a bit screwy, yeah, and suddenly something starts to take shape. And what starts to take shape is the samskara. So this is a man, a blind man walking with the aid of a stick. Yeah. So, and I think we don't want to. So samskaras is the potter throwing a pot. Yeah, so it's that kind of sense of something starts to take shape. And I like the image because it's, you know, it's like clay is this kind of base substance that in a way doesn't have a kind of self-personality to it. But you start to work it, you start to spin it, yeah, and work it, and it starts to take on a certain kind of, you know, this is this pot and that's that pot. It starts to differentiate. So that kind of moment of differentiation. And in Buddhism, we call them the karma formation, so we understand that there is some kind of patterning already there. You know, karma, this kind of sense of a pattern that passes through time, whatever time is. What's time, right? Not what's the time, what's time? What is time? Yes. So, yeah. Karma, patterning, does that kind of make sense to some people? Any nods? Thank you. Oh, yes. Okay, so, again, it's a mystery, you know, what is reborn? Well, but there is some continuity of consciousness after death. This much I know. Sorry, we're not going to go into these in huge amounts of detail, so don't feel you've got to keep it all in your head. Basically, we're on a journey of things becoming more sort of substantial and more personal. Yeah? So here we get Vijnana, which is a monkey swinging through the trees, going for the flowers. So this kind of sense of, again, of this something coming from one moment to the next, or one life to the next, depending on what our kind of time frame is for this. And then coming into form. So again, more solidification, more of a sort of sense of a self starting to take shape. And so this one is a boat with four passengers. So the boat is understood to be form, rupa. Form. And then the passengers are feeling, perception, volition, and consciousness, which you might recognize as the skandhas. People heard of the skandhas? Put your hand up if you've heard about the skandhas. Fantastic. Okay, all right. Don't worry. It's just a bit of jargon. Love our jargon. But yeah, so the heaps. Then we move on to more kind of comprehensible territory. Here we start to move into the world of the five senses, well, actually the six senses. So taste, touch, the rest, hearing, vision, smell, but also mind. That mind, in Buddhism, mind is a sense, which is an intriguing notion in itself, of course. So we've a consciousness has developed and it now has senses. Yeah? So, and we know this happens to us in the womb, you know, where our sense perception develops in utero. It's really how we kind of monitor the world through the senses, how we know that we are in the world.
Can I just ask, what is those two? I know avidya means ignorance. What is the samskara and vijnana? What do those mean?
So this is karma formation. So this is the kind of patterning.
Is there one word translation for samskara?
Well, karma formation is two. You don't like it's two words.
No. I mean avidya is just ignorance. So is it like?
How about karma formations? I said it all wrong. Yeah. No, I can't. Volitions.
Volitions.
Volitions. Volitions. Okay, volitions. Yes.
And
so
this
one.
Yeah.
This is consciousness.
Consciousness.
But yeah, in the sense of the monkey swinging through the consciousness comes up again here, and it's in a slightly different way. So, but yeah, worth this stuff is worth kind of getting into in some detail, but we're not doing that tonight. So we've got this. Say we've got this organism, and it's got senses, yeah. And at which point we come into contact with the world. So sparsha. So that sparsha is a man and woman, embracing. So, in a way, a kind of quintessential depiction of contact. That kind of moment when we actually come into relationship with the other. But yeah, it's also, you know, it's a symbol. Is it a metaphor? No, it's not a metaphor. What is it? It's a sign, yeah, of all those other moments where something comes in, something comes through. From the outside and affects us. We can also have internal contact. So, because we're such these hyper intelligent reflexive beings, you know, this kind of imaginal material is going on as well in the body, isn't it? Yeah. So that in itself is contact, which I guess is why mind is understood to be a sense in Buddhism. So, contact, and then the next one, Vedana. People heard the word Vedana before? It's a good one to hang on to actually. If you're going to remember any of these, remember Vedana. So, another somewhat graphic image is of. A man with an arrow in his eye. Sorry about that. If you're into your early English history, you'll know there was a king who ended up with an arrow in his eye. But even as a kind of universal symbol, I think it kind of says something, doesn't it? So this kind of sense that. We have a strong relationship with life. Yeah, things really do get into us, and yeah, probably particularly other people, and that can be painful. But again, we take it to stand for all our responses to contact. And Vedana is quite simple. It only goes three ways. Yeah. So that basic feeling tone response in the body is either away from, towards, or neutral. Yeah. So those are the simple three options that we. Operate from at all times. I mean, we kind of extrapolate and proliferate and decorate those three responses in significant ways and create whole kind of stories about what's going on and stuff like that. But those are the sort of, it's almost like a sort of primitive kind of amoeba level, isn't it? Yeah? There's a sort of, there's a basic response. That's the mind either just sits in neutral or it moves away or it moves towards. And again, that's happening all the time. We're kind of having those experiences, having the contact, and getting a sense of I like that, or that's working for me, let's have some more of that, or I don't like that, that's not working for me, I want less of that. Or, you know, this is okay. And you know, most of the time that's fine. That's not going to be problematic. That's just the way that we function as animals in a way. And in the trauma release work that I do, I talk about the window of tolerance. So that's that kind of bandwidth in the middle of our nervous system where, yeah, things can be okay, things can be difficult, things can be not difficult, pleasant, painful, neutral. And we can kind of manage all that and stay present and basically, yeah, we know our experience of being in the world goes up and down, but essentially we're okay about being within that bandwidth. What we want to avoid is kind of either going out the top when we start to go into fight and flight, or drop out the bottom where we're going to freeze and fold. So, fold, freeze and fold. Yeah. So this is the two sort of ends of the nervous system that we want to not get stuck in. So, yeah, feelings in the body. And yeah, again, this for me, you know, this is Vedana is very much the kind of realm of gut feelings. So it's all about our kind of instinctual response to being in someone else's company, or being in a tube train, or being on our own. Whatever situation it is, there are these quite subtle but quite kind of primitive moving towards, moving away from being okay is going on all the time. Yeah. Does that ring true for people? I mean, if there's a lot of chatter going on in our heads, then we're not going to notice it. So, yeah, part of what we're doing when we're slowing down and being more mindful is that we can attend more to that shifting. Okay, so you'll notice at this point there is. No red line. Yeah, so what have we met at this point, do we think?
Gap.
We have met a gap, yes. So, yeah, for me this teaching of the gap between Vedana and Trishna is, yeah, I think it's for me it's kind of the key, one of the key kind of teachings. Just for me. I don't know if it's for other people. So, Trishna is... Anyone know?
Thirst.
Yes, thank you. And it's literally, the image is of a woman offering a drink to a seated man. So again, I'm afraid there's some sexual politics has crept in. But if we can simply hold it as a cipher... For all those times in which we seek, it's like seeking something from outside ourselves to satisfy ourselves.
I just want to say that Pali is Trishna. Is that in Sanskrit or Pali?
Sanskrit.
Yeah, that's the Sanskrit. Yes.
In Persian, we say Tishna, which means thirsty.
So, I'll just carry on, I'll just take us all the way around. Trishna, craving, and then the next one, grasping. So, in a way, that's the kind of, and the image for grasping is a man gathering fruit from a tree. So, here we've been given a drink, but then somehow it's kind of like, even that wasn't enough. We're going off scrumping and gathering fruit. So there's that. Yeah, we need more. We want more. This is becoming birth and death. So the kind of wheel has closed again. So you can think of this as a whole life, or you can think of it as a kind of what's happening on a moment to moment basis. Both are true. Yeah. So let's just go back to this bit here, the gap. So, there's a gap between Vedana, those kind of primitive, that basic response that we have towards what's happening around us or what's happening inside of us, that we either want it or we don't want it or we're okay with it. Yeah? And can you kind of get a sense of how that thing is just kind of moving us all the time, unsettling us all the time? Yeah? Does that resonate with people's experience? Yeah, that's... Okay, so it's kind of throwing us off our centre all the time. We're being pulled one way or pushed the other. So, if we just carry on and take the drink, then basically the wheel just continues to turn. Yeah, because this is—it's kind of what we've always done. It's what, you know, it's our conditioning. So, you know, we're talking about conditionality. So here we're talking about conditioning, and we know from our kind of neurology that conditioning actually takes place in the brain. So our neural networks, neurons that fire together, wire together. Yeah. So, yeah, if we keep doing something the same each time, that actually creates a synaptic connection in our central, in our cortex, neocortex. So yeah, there's a groove. So which means, yeah, if we just replay that groove, it just gets deeper each time. So each time we go around the wheel, we might be making it, digging it a little bit more. There is this moment on the wheel where we have the chance to do something different. Yeah. So that is in this gap. Yeah. So we get the feeling. We have the feeling of I don't like this. But instead of whatever it is that we do at that moment, whatever our kind of Trishna is, so either we leave the room and go and, I don't know, even just going and leaving the room and banging our head against the wall. So whatever our particular pattern is. But rather than doing that, we decide we're going to stay in the room and do what we can to be kind to ourselves and the other person rather than our old defense strategy. Because these kind of primitive feelings that we get very quickly turn into our defense strategies, those kind of ways of behaving that have become very kind of used to us and that often kind of make it difficult for us to be in the world and make us difficult people to be around as well. Yeah. So if we can, rather than just leaping straight across, if we can actually slow down, which is what in many ways mindfulness is about, and notice what is actually going on without jumping to the next bit of our programming, then we can do something different. So that's the fork in the road. We also talk about it's the working ground of the spiritual life. So this is where we change. So for as long as we go around the wheel, we're not changing. We're just, I mean, we're getting older, but other than that, we're not getting any wiser. Yeah, but yeah, if we can drop into the gap and spend some time in the gap, then we can make some wiser choices. But there is a problem. One of the things is we've already got a lot of momentum. Yeah. So, as people, you know, people you may want to, you know, when you first learn to meditate, you know, for some people it's easy to set up a regular practice, but for a lot of us, me included, you know, it was like that. And then my old momentum just kind of kept reasserting itself. You know, it's like you have to just kind of stick something solid in. But the other aspect of the gap is what we meet in here. Yeah. So this tends to be the stuff that we don't feel comfortable sitting with. Yeah, is what's in the gap. Because it's what we're trying to get away from by accepting the drink. So here we have difficult feelings in the body. So part of what we're doing in when we're sitting in our meditation practice is being with those difficult feelings in a kind and loving way. And if we can do that, then we can our whole nervous system can start to slow down. We start to feel safer, and we start to think, okay, well, maybe there are other options, you know, in that situation that keeps repeating. So fortunately, there's a book of ethics down here as well. So we've got the manual. So remembering, you know, ethics, sila, samadhi, pranaya. So ethics comes first, and it's the basis of our practice, because we don't always necessarily know even if we've slowed down enough in the gap to say, I'm going to try and do it differently this time, we don't necessarily still know what to do. So, but the precepts kind of give us a steer. Yeah, so they help to orient us towards what is wholesome. Of course they start off with non-harm. Non-harm towards ourselves, I would suggest, has got to be the first step. Yeah, so... again, if we can maintain the sense of self-care in the gap here, then that's going to be a huge support for us. Okay, so what traditionally is said is here is dukkha. This is dukkha in the gap. Yeah. So this is uneasiness, that sense of something not right. Which, you know, can be from anything from mild to extreme, as we probably all know. But that, interestingly, the first step on what we call the spiral path, which is the path of evolution, is dukkha. So is that being able to sit with what's difficult. And on the basis of that arises shraddha, or faith confidence. So it's kind of like, okay, well, this difficult material is not actually going to kill me. Yeah? And there is a kind of... there is a way of being with it that means it's okay. Yeah? So that's where faith comes in. I mean faith is, again, faith is a big word. Yeah, but for me, yeah, that basic faith that there is a way out. Yeah. And so then on the basis of that arises pramodya. Pramodya. What did you say that was? Just it's joy. Sure. Joy is the simple word. Is there a particular quality to the to it?
It's the joy of feeling okay about yourself and what you're doing with your life.
Yes. Okay. So can we see that if we actually have an experience where the practices allow us to feel more comfortable in being in the world, then it's kind of like, oh, there is something that works. Yeah, so that leads to joy. Yeah, that we've actually found something that works. And then from that we move into priti, which is rapture, rapturous energy. So delight, delightful energy. So this is kind of, maybe it's more specifically about meditation experience. But some people might have had that. People have that sense sometimes when you're sitting that there is a kind of energetic element to our experience, and it's very pleasant. Yeah. So that, yeah, and once we start to take off on this, on the spiral path, that we may find that pretty comes more often when we're meditating. Then again, largely in the context of meditation, but that the pretty subsides, and the next stage is a state of bliss. Nice word. I mean, we tend to think of being blissed out, but this is kind of blissed in a way. So you know, you're very much in touch with experience, but it's extremely positive and peaceful state. And you know, I've had touches of experience of bliss, and they're kind of things that stay with you. It's like, oh, that was special. and then samadhi, which is concentration, I suppose. Would you just samadhi in this context?
Unification of the mind.
Unification of the mind, yes. Yeah. At which point we shift from what is called the mundane path onto what is described as the transcendental path. So at that point there's another gap. Well, it's not a gap as much as such, but it's a kind of shift in... what is a shift in? It's a shift in the harmonic vibration. Yes. So at which point... We move into knowledge and vision of how things really are. So that's the point at which there is we start to see through the ignorance. Yeah, and we start to see how we're getting in our own way, if you want to use it like that. Yeah, that conditionality, this whole thing around conditionality, is kind of like we're doing it in a way. We're doing the conditioning. We're bringing things in. Conditions into reality. So at that point, you drop that. Yeah, you get it. And then we move on to dispassion and finally to freedom. I don't know if that's why. But anyway, we cross that transcendental bridge that is no bridge, gate that is no gate, then we don't. We're not coming back down again. Up until that point, you can come back down the spiral and fall back onto the wheel. Yeah, snakes and ladders. So, I think the fact that when we slow down enough to drop into the gap and open up that space, which is kind of what we're doing when we're meditating. It's we meet ourselves in that space, and yeah, depending on what we brought with us, we have an experience in that space of what it is to be us in the moment. And then we inhibit our usual response to that long enough for us to open up some other options.